Hello and welcome to another Pete's Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Smith, and every show is dedicated to learning the latest in the science at the heart of behaviour change, the future of work for all of us, and organisations and entrepreneurs making a difference in the world.
Hello, Peter.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining us on this call. I've got Dr. Peter Diamandis, the Chairman and CEO of the XPRIZE Foundation, and a co-founder and executive chairman of the Singularity University. And I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the work you do and how we can inspire a few more entrepreneurs to get on the same track. So thanks for joining us on this call.
You're welcome.
Now, you know, when I was a kid, I used to get the atlases out and draw on all the maps and you know, dream about working and traveling around the world. And I'm doing that now. And I see that you studied molecular genetics and aerospace engineering, and I'm getting these visions of you as a kid running around cloning lab mice and setting off rockets in the backyard. But what I really want to know is, what did you tinker with? What consumed you, you know, when you were a kid? Like, where did the journey begin with your work?
Peter, it started really with a fascination in spaceflight and rockets, and I spent much of my youth building rockets. Back then, they were called Estes rockets. I would build that, and I would build robots. So that's really how I spent my time, building larger and larger rockets in my backyard, building robots. And then chemistry, I had what would today be a terrorist handset of explosives that I used to mix and match, make my own rocket fuel and blow things up left and right. So that was me.
Okay. I can see your mom coming out back going, no, don't do that. Awesome. You wrote in the book Abundance about the, the book is like a red flag for cynics and realists. Now, I believe in what's written there. And so, and I really get your conviction on it. But how did you come to this notion of abundance? Like, was it a blinding flash of the obvious? Was it a mindset, a pivotal experience, some divine intervention? Like, how did it start? How did it evolve?
It was the result of the work I've done with the XPRIZE and Singularity University, and really just seeing the rate of change rapidly increasing and how technology is making the world a much better and better place. And it was extrapolating those trends out 10, 20, 30 years maximum, and realizing that, you know, we are heading towards a place where people's basic needs are going to be met. And that was basically it. So it was really my XPRIZE and Singularity University work that resulted in that.
Okay, yeah. You'd always thought about it along the way, but then you put it together in that book. And it's something that, you know, I can see the inspiration in there, and I wanted to ask you, you know, just me to you, like, what really floats your boat? What, you know, gets you up in the morning and maybe keeps you up at night? But what is it that lights a fire in your belly and keeps that engine running?
I think it's dreaming big, bold dreams, thinking about how do you make this stuff all happen. It is setting goals that are really audacious and then chipping away at them. And I also love inspiring people. There's no question about that. I love finding an entrepreneur and helping them dream in a big way. So, I mean, it's that. I love teaching through the university, you know, through Singularity University that I created, and I love being an entrepreneur and coming up with new ideas and making them real.
Yeah. You point to these do-it-yourself innovators and techno-philanthropists and the rising billion, and, you know, I'm excited about these individuals and small groups can be empowered by these new technologies. But I want to know how you join the dots with them. I work for the UN around the world, and I find it cumbersome at times. And I just want to know how you keep these groups linking in with each other. Like, is there an organizing principle for how they can maybe respond more effectively than someone, say, like the UN?
I think these DIY, do-it-yourself communities are all based upon passion. And I think the way that we organize ourselves societally these days is changing. It used to be where you live, your national flag, your language, those things were the organizing principles of years past. Today, it's not that anymore. It's what you're passionate about. I am passionate about the oceans, or I'm passionate about spaceflight, or I'm passionate about, you know, teaching kids how to fish. I don't know what it might be, but people can now relate much more around their passion, independent of where they live, independent of how old they are, independent of what language they speak. They, you know, that's what I think we're heading towards, is a world where people are passion driven, and that kind of energy and juice overcomes bureaucracy, it overcomes roadblocks, and drives people to perform at much higher levels than ever before.
Yeah, and that drives their need to connect with other people like that.
Exactly.
You know, I think about, like, let's just say I've bootstrapped a startup, you know, like I'm a budding entrepreneur. Maybe I've got a few, you know, companies under my belt, and I've got the bug. I want to keep growing that, and, you know, I'm all cashed up. But maybe I know there's more to it. So, you know, how do I bake all of what you've said here together? Like, how do you build this sense of social responsibility and that notion of making a profit and making a difference? How do you build that into the DNA of a business, you know, right from the get-go? Because I see so many businesses out there that, you know, their model has to completely flip and change to make any difference. So how do we build a business from the ground up with this baked into it?
So at Singularity University up in Silicon Valley that I'm chairman of, we have a concept we call 10 to the 9th plus startups. And 10 to the 9th is the scientific notation that represents a billion. And the idea is today that as an entrepreneur, you can start a company, a product, or a service that has potential to impact the lives of a billion people in a positive way. And if you can do that, why would you want to do anything less? And the notion that I speak to people about is, listen, the world's biggest problems, hunger, water, energy, literacy, governance, shelter, whatever it might be, those huge global grand challenges are the world's biggest market opportunities as well. And why don't you target that? You know, what do people really need? What's been tried? What failed? What do they wish they had? And so at SU, and when I'm looking at my biggest next ventures, I'm looking for what the world's biggest problems are, because I know in that space, I can start a product, a service, or a company that's going to have a lot of potential. And if I'm successful, even a little bit, it makes the world a better place.
So you're really talking about these new startups and entrepreneurs to look a bit wider than, you know, I guess just the idea of making some good money there, but actually think about how it can make a difference along the way as well.
It's not about making money. Money comes to those who create something that is useful on a huge scale. And look to the world's biggest problems for that, because you can do good and do great at the same time.
Yeah, that's for sure. It seems like that's what you're doing. On a daily basis, what is it that you dial into that sustains you? You know, it seems like, you know, we've got 20 minutes to catch here, and I'm sure you're rushing around everywhere as you know, make these changes and make a difference. What is it? Is it a meditation practice? Is it what sort of belief is it that keeps you going?
The belief that anything is possible, the belief that every problem can be fixed, the belief that the goals I've set, whether it's asteroid mining or human longevity or solving global literacy, is absolutely achievable. It's just a matter of chipping away at the problem and setting some immediate near-term goal that I want to achieve in the day, and then kicking ass till I get it done.
Yep. And then tackle the next one the next day.
Yeah.
When you say scratching away at it, I kind of get this image of people pushing back, you know, and I know when some of my less strong beliefs are challenged, I kind of take it on board. But how do you kind of push back on the resistance that people may have?
By believing in my principles enough and knowing that anything new and novel is going to be resisted. You know, the day before something is truly a breakthrough, it's a crazy idea. A friend of mine, a mentor, Arthur C. Clarke, the author, the creator of the communication satellite, said, any new idea goes through three phases. The first phase, people say it's a crazy idea, it'll never work. The next phase, people say it might work, it's not worth doing. The third phase, they say, hey, I told you it was a great idea all along. And that's basically it. I know I pulled off some impossible things before. Back then, they were small impossible things. Now they're bigger impossible things, and I keep working until I do it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the building block of belief. Do you see singularity being something that can get out to schools in inner city neighborhoods and villages in Africa? Is can it be a satellite thing, a franchise thing? Can it link in with other universities?
Well, it's an institution that we're working to take online so it can scale globally around the world. And I hope that we will get there soon enough. I've got meetings in a couple of days to talk about that specifically. So eventually.
All right. Terrific. Hey, Pete, welcome back.
Thank you.
No worries. It's funny, my battery was just about to run out. I had a meeting in the city, and I ran back up to the corporate offices. I'm sitting at the boardroom table with the iPhone plugged into their system. So we're set to go. Where did we leave off? We left off, I was wondering about who your mentors were, like who guided this journey, or are you completely like independent in that? You mentioned Arthur C. Clarke. I'm thinking, Buckminster Fuller. Who are the other people that inform your thinking?
When I think about it, the people who inform my thinking were really the books that I read. There were science fiction authors like Arthur C. Clarke, like Robert Heinlein, like Isaac Asimov.
Yeah.
Whose work really inspired me. And it was in those stories and the characters in those stories that really got me excited about a particular future that I would focus on trying to make happen.
Wow, that's a big translation when I think of that body of work. And so you must have found a way to kind of really take that down to it, if you like, street level and apply it in every day. Is that why you chose to go into study things like, aerospace engineering and molecular biology?
Well, I mean, my story is one that I pursued biology and medicine early on, really because it was what was expected of me and my family. And my parents, my dad was a doctor, and my mom managed his office, and my sister was a doctor, and expected I'd become a doctor.
Yeah.
And my heart and soul was in space, and when I ended up realizing my chances of becoming an astronaut were small, becoming a physician was a great means towards becoming an astronaut, because if you weren't a fighter pilot, being an astronaut was the next best thing.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I ended up getting my medical degree, but going and getting my engineering degree is really to pursue my passion, which was space.
Mm-hmm.
And, the point at which I stopped doing things to make other people happy and really pursued the things that I cared about most.
Yeah, yeah. Look, what's interesting to me is the I recently read somewhere that you're investing a lot in the acidification of the ocean and trying to eradicate that and the research behind that. So I'm kind of wondering how you kind of reconcile that with outer space. You're keeping it right down to Earth, but then also out of space.
Well, my feeling is that we are, as a species, expanding very rapidly, and the best way for us to keep and preserve the Earth as a pristine environment is to start to use resources that are available off the Earth. Instead of raping, pillaging the Earth for its resources, we can go look outside Earth and gain access to those resources.
Mm. yet you still are trying to make the best of what we can do with what we have left on Earth.
Well, I mean, listen, we've learned, you know, technology has improved vastly.
Yeah.
And we're learning how to, first of all, measure what's going on, which is the first step. You can't affect something and improve it until you can measure it.
Mm.
So the Wendy Schmidt Oil Health, I mean, the Wendy Schmidt Ocean Health X Prize,
yeah,
is really about creating a new generation of ocean sensors that can measure pH accurately,
mm,
so we can actually know what's going on. So technology is helping us both measure better and and to do things more efficiently. You know, we are, you know, there are going to be breakthroughs on converting solar energy to useful electricity.
Mm.
And, you know, the Earth is bathed in 5,000 times more energy from the sun than we consume as a species in a year. So we could continue to drill for oil, or we could start to learn how to convert solar energy into useful forms of energy that power our society.
It seems to me that you kind of don't take no for an answer. And when I think about, you know, big organizations and governments that kind of are slow-moving ships, how do you get past that? Or do you work around that? Or are you trying to butt your head up against that wall?
So, 2 points. One is, where the government is a necessary part of the equation, one of the things that I have done over the years is basically just kept butting my head against the wall until I solved that problem. So my company, Zero Gravity Corporation, which had to get permission from the FAA to do zero-G flights, took me 11 years to get approval. The XPRIZE had to change the rules and regulations for private spaceflight. And, you know, it took many years to do it. But the other side of the equation is basically figure out how to do it without the government. How do you solve the challenge without dependency on the government? And I think we're entering a time where the power that that entrepreneurs have today really enables them to do what only governments and large corporations could do 20 years ago.
Mm, that's it. And that's that exponential growth. They are applying themselves in different ways that aren't as bureaucratically cut back or limited. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, in terms of, like, it seems like you're a busy guy, and I always think about entrepreneurs, and I kind of think, is this work-life balance a crock, a shit?
So, listen, I'm not one to ask about work-life balance. I'm someone who is constantly prioritizing what I have in my life. I'm running 4 companies. I've got 2 babies that are, you know, 2 and a quarter years old at home. And it is always a challenge to, it's a matter of what do you prioritize at that time. So
yeah,
as my kids are getting now going from 2 years old to 3 years old, my goal is to cut my travel by at least 50% next year to spend more time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we are all, no matter if you're the wealthiest person on the planet or the poorest person on the planet, we have one thing in common. We're all born with 24 hours in a day and 7 days a week. And it's how you use your time that is important.
There's a spark in there that I guess a lot of people to aspire to, and it's in your books, and it's in everything that you do. What is the grain, the seed of that spark? Is it something that your parents passed on to you? Is it a Greek heritage? How does this come about? Because I look at that, and I don't want to take away from too much superhuman. If I look at that and kind of think, damn, I wish I had that philosopher, that application.
So Pete, if I had to say what is it that I am most grateful for, it is the passion that I have, that I live life with, and the renewed energy that I attack problems with. And I am, I think the most valuable thing that I have is my level of excitement and passion for the things that I do. I feel they are my energy source. Whenever things go wrong, as they constantly do, right? I mean, you could be really lucky. You could be really hardworking. You could be really smart. You could be really well connected. All of those things can help you move forward. But the fact of the matter is, you're always going to have, unless you're super lucky, you're really going to have stuff that goes wrong along the way.
Yeah.
It's how do you pick yourself up from those disasters? How do you think about it when everything goes wrong? And ultimately, I think for me, I have my guiding stars, the things that I'm passionate about that re-energize me, that I wake up with and say, okay, that's what I'm doing. That's where I'm going. I'm going that way. Mm. And that helps me out a lot.
Yep. It sounds like it's incontrovertible. It's undeniable. And it's like there's no excuse from the sound of it.
Agreed.
Wow. So there's a lot of, flux and change happening in, let's say, the American government right now. If you were going to throw a bunch of money at it, what would you do? And by that, I mean metaphorically, if you were going to turn and focus on that, how would you make that work more effectively?
Here's the deal. The current systems we have in place in the United States and around the world were designed and developed hundreds of years ago before the technology we have today existed. So we don't have a true democracy here. We have a representative democracy.
Yep.
You can imagine that in the future, if we're starting a country again today, you'd be able to say one person, one vote, and you could actually vote on stuff and have people, decide what they wanted to do. So, I think it's interesting that in the future we're going to start to create virtual worlds in which we're going to experiment with new forms of government. We're going to start to move society off the planet, in which case we're going to start to experiment again with new forms of government. So, America still represents for me the best place as an entrepreneur to make my dreams come true.
Yeah.
It may or may not be for others, but so be it. But I think we have the ability to iterate and experiment in the future. It's just really, really hard to do.
Yeah, it seems that way right now. And that kind of leads me to think about the people that you are focusing on, and I mentioned this before in abundance, like what is the democracy? What is the seed that's growing there? That you say that, government has been that way for 100 years when it first came about. We've got something new that's growing here. Are we calling that a democracy? Or are you calling it something different? Like what's its organizing principle?
I think the organizing principle going forward is what I call a world of possibility versus a world of luxury, where individuals can have their basic needs met, where individuals can have access to the water, food, and shelter, and energy, and healthcare, and information that they need to live a life where they can dream.
Mm.
We're going from a world of have and have nots to a world where I think we will have a world of haves and super haves. There will be a divide. It will always be those individuals who can afford to go to Mars or to extend their life, but at least there will be a world in which the basic needs of every man, woman, and child are being met. And that's the world I'm working towards, where in parts of the world today, your chances of if you have six children, before the age of five, two of them are likely to die. A third, infant mortality, which is insane. And I think we're heading towards a world where those kids can, in fact, live and can be educated and can, you know, get the food and energy they need to live a life where they can make their dreams come true.
You know, I hear this, and I can feel literally in myself the resistance of this idealism. And, but it's not just idealism you've got. You're putting it into practice. And so I'm interested to know, people that come along to Singularity University, how do you bend them? Or are they already, you know, ready to take it on?
I think our goal when we are educating executives and graduate students who come to Singularity University is really to show them the power of the technologies that are coming online and how they can fundamentally change everything. You know, I use the example that today someone under the poverty line in the United States, the poorest people in the U.S., still have running water, a roof over their their heads, a refrigerator, air conditioning, a cell phone. Some have a car. And these are things that the wealthiest people on the planet never had before. But yet the poorest Americans now have this. And so we're raising the poverty line more and more and more.
When you say you're raising the poverty line, for these entrepreneurs, for these graduates and executives that come along to the university, do they know this? Or do you have to really, you know, shake them up a bit? Do you have to kind of shift their beliefs just like you are, have that same sort of certainty?
You know, I can't speak for them, but I feel like many people, when they see the big picture of where we really are and where we're going, the connections get made. And I think the whole idea is a perspective change about the trajectory to get them to think in exponential versus linear fashions.
This is easier said than done. And so I'm wondering how you get that point across. I work in developing leaders and managers in organizations, and I find sometimes I'm butting my head against the wall to get them to think differently about, you know, the systemic problems they face, not only in their organizational life, but in the markets they work in. So I'm wondering, is it an experiential process you take them through, or is it just more information that I can find online?
I think it is experiential, and I think it is seeing and feeling and experiencing all of these technologies that are jointly converging and growing, and it's a sense of an inevitability that we're heading that way that provides me the greatest optimism, and that ultimately had me write abundance as something that came pouring out of me of, like, you know, this seems obvious to me and I need to share enough information to other people so it becomes more obvious to them.
I'm fascinated by how this sort of university is obviously not mainstream. And so the people that are going there and the work that you're doing with them, is it case studies? Is it like, do they get out there in the real world with this real technology and try things on? How does it work if I was going to enroll in there tomorrow?
So, I mean, the program that we do for executives is one where it's really a week long, and it takes time for people to see this, and it's really walking them through and them seeing the full 360 degrees of all of these parts and pieces working together that finally gets them to understand where we're going. And you know, I think we take for granted the significant changes. We take for granted that on your cell phone today, you have for free two-way video teleconferencing. You have a high-definition video camera and still camera. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, the ability to search the world information database for free instantly. Yeah. You can talk to anybody anywhere on the planet. You know, that we're having this conversation on opposite ends of the globe and not thinking about this, and, you know, you're pissed if things are a little garbled or 2 seconds delayed. But these are miracles we're having, and it's just the beginning, and it's accelerating at a rapid rate. And so, you know, when you finally get that, you realize that there are no problems that can't be solved, that we really are heading towards a world of extraordinary abundance, that the challenges we've had are each falling, and that the number of people on the planet empowered to solve problems are growing exponentially, and therefore the problems themselves are falling rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that the pass mark?
What's that?
Is that the pass mark for people that come to your university? Is that that's how they graduate, by the addressing and solving of these problems?
Well, at the graduate level, perhaps. For the executives, it's really, there is no pass, there is no fail. It's really giving them a view of the future, what's coming over the horizon, and then, you know, it's up to them what they do with it. But
yeah.
I feel like we're giving them an important view that they don't get anyplace else. And with that, Peter, I'm sitting in my driveway again, so it's late here. I'm going to say goodnight.
No worries. You've certainly shifted my viewpoint in this short conversation of time we had together, so I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Be well, my friend.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to another awesome edition of Pete's Podcast. Work smart, do good, live great, and do the work that matters. See you next time.